So Daksha Maharaj, the foremost child of the Pachetas and Marisha, is performing austerities to gain the potency, the power from the Lord to generate population. And now he's offering the Lord the Hansaguya prayers. So we'll begin speaking about those. We already spoke about some of them. Om Agyanatamirandasya Janadana Salakaya Chaksusamilitan Jena Tasmay Sri Rivena Maha Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sapandantikam Vanjagopadrugascha Kripasindubayavacha Titanam Babinebo Vaishnavidamonama. So we read up to 29, I believe. Text 29. I'm supposed to begin 30. Is that right? Do you have that? Are you aware of that? Okay. In any case, we'll begin on 30, but I'll review the basic thrust of the prayer so far. In the first prayer that, or mantra prayer that Daksha offered to the Lord, he described and glorified the Lord as beyond. Beyond what? Beyond those looking for him to be able to perceive, if one's looking is based on one's senses. Because although the Lord is so powerful and the Supreme Person and everything, and although everything is resting upon him, and although he's a supreme controller, he's behind everything that occurs, still, because of our own teeniness, our own inabilities, our own finiteness, we cannot perceive him, although he is there controlling everything. And the example given is as the sense objects cannot perceive the senses that perceive those objects, the sense objects cannot perceive the senses. So similarly, although we are being perceived by the Lord can see us, and he knows everything. But yet we, like the sense objects, cannot perceive that one. Then in the second verse, because the sense objects are material and not conscious. So the second verse, 25, describes how matter cannot know him, but consciousness also can't know him. Even though we are conscious, we are not dulled matter, like the sense objects, still, he is still beyond our ability to see and perceive. Then in text 26, the discussion changes, it shifts to how we can actually know him. So consciousness by itself is unable to know him, but there are particular states of consciousness that will allow the living entity who possesses consciousness to perceive that Lord, even though by his own power he is not able to perceive him. So text 26 describes that when consciousness is purified, when all material material is removed from the consciousness, that means when all false ego is gone, when all material contamination is gone, because all material consciousness is based on this most basic fundamental contamination of false ego, thinking that matter is meant for us to enjoy. or rather even prior to that, is just that the sense that I am an enjoyer, that I am the center, that I have an independent, my existence is independent of the Lord. I myself have an independent existence. Actually, I have no independent existence. When I define myself, any definition of who I am, even if the definition is that I am eternal, or I am spiritual, I am chit, conscious, even if that definition is there, it is incomplete, imperfect, if the definition of who I am doesn't entail my relationship with the Lord. So therefore, in all these verses, Daksha is offering his obeisances to the Lord and explaining that when one's consciousness is purified, then in trance, then the Lord will reveal himself to us. When one's consciousness is uncontaminated by matter, when one's consciousness is transcendental, as the Lord is transcendental, then the Lord will reveal himself to us. So some examples of this, where something that is present but one needs some expertise to extract it. So in 27-28, the Hansaguya prayers and Daksha repeating them describes how the yogis can extract the Lord's presence from the heart. The heart is covered by material coverings. So the yogis are able to extract the Lord's presence from the heart due to their piercing and pure consciousness, just as brahmanas can extract fire from wood by chanting mantras. So the yogis in this way can perceive and meditate and fully meditate on and on the Lord who is in their heart, even though ordinary people can't do so. This is due to the purity of their consciousness. An example again is just like the Brahmins, due to their mantras, can extract, make wood where fire is inherently within wood. When the fire is removed from the wood, what's left is ash. So similarly, when Krishna is within our hearts, he is everywhere. There's no place where God is not. That is the meaning of the Absolute Truth. So the yogi, due to his pure consciousness and his serving mood, he can perceive the Lord just as he can extract the Lord's presence due to that consciousness by the Lord's mercy. Then text 29 describes how devotion evokes the serving mood, bhakti, devotion, evokes the Lord's pleasure and mercy. And without that, without evoking the Lord's pleasure, evoking His mercy, the Lord won't reveal Himself and He'll forever remain distant beyond our thoughts, our concepts, and ideas. So another way of looking at this point is that by our own power, whatever we perceive through our thoughts and ideas in our mind is bound to be material. And by the Lord's power, if He so desires, He can allow us access into His nature. And He can reveal Himself to us. Okay, so that's the point that the Hansaguya prayers are up to right now. The point that the Lord reveals Himself through bhakti after he feels merciful to the devotees. So then the next question is, who is that Lord who reveals Himself? Who is that Supreme Lord? So this verse describes that He is the cause of all causes. He is the supreme Brahman. He is the source of everything. So the next verses are going to describe who that Lord is, who is perceived in the pure consciousness, when a devotee is in trance, and when he invokes the Lord's mercy, so what can one perceive the Supreme Brahman? So this 30th verse, here's the Prabhupada's translation. The Supreme Brahman, Krishna, is the ultimate resting place and source of everything. So everything comes from him, and at the time of annihilation, everything returns back into him. Everything is done by him. Everything belongs to him. And everything is offered to him. He is the ultimate objective. And whether acting or causing others to act, he is the ultimate doer, whether he acts directly or whether he acts indirectly, causing another to act. When we trace back any action, we will ultimately get to Sarva Karana Karanam, the Lord who is the cause of all causes. The Hansakuya prayers continue. He is the ultimate doer. There are many causes, high and low. But since he is the cause of all causes, he is well known as the Supreme Brahman who existed before all activities. So he is the source of all activities. He is the Supreme Brahman, the cause of all causes. He is one without a second. He is unequaled. And he has no other cause. So we can hear these words. But we should try to conceive that this is Krishna. He is one without a second. He has no other cause. He's the original person. He is causing everything going on in the material world and in the spiritual world. He is the source of everything. So how powerful is this Lord? There are so many powerful people in this world, but he is the source of that power. He is causing every single thing to occur ultimately. Everything is resting upon his energy. So therefore this prayer ends, I therefore offer my respects unto him because of his greatness. So before one can enter into an intimate relationship with Krishna, one has to understand the potency of Krishna. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is the original cause, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham Savasya Prabhavo. Even this material world, which is conducted under the modes of material nature, is caused by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who therefore also has an intimate relationship with the material world. If the material world were not a part of his body, the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Cause, would be incomplete. That means that if the material world was separate from him, that means there would be something outside of his jurisdiction. And therefore, his jurisdiction would be incomplete. So what kind of God has an incomplete jurisdiction? The definition of God means the supreme controller. The supreme control of what? The supreme control of everything. Not most everything. So the material world is also a part of him. Therefore, Prabhupada's purport continues, we hear Savadeva Savamiti Samahatma Sadolabha. If one knows that Vasudev, which means basically the all-pervading Lord, is the original cause of all causes, he becomes a perfect Mahatma, a great soul. And at that time, when he understands Vasudeva Savami Iti Samahatma Sadolabha, then he can surrender unto Krishna, feeling full security in the one he's surrendering to. Why? Because he's the cause of all causes. Nothing can happen without his jurisdiction. So how wonderful it is to place ourselves in the care of such a person. The Brahma Samhita 5.1 declares Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the supreme controller. He has an eternal, blissful spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, for he is the prime cause of all causes. The Supreme Brahman, Tad Brahma, is the cause of all causes, but he has no cause. So there is no cause to him, but he is the cause of all else. That is the meaning of Supreme Brahman. That is the meaning of God. Anadi Radhya Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. Govinda, Krishna, is the original cause of all causes, but he has no cause for his appearance as Govinda. Govinda expands in multifarious forms, and nevertheless they are one. Even though they appear to be many, they are one. As confirmed by Madhvacharya, Ananya Sadrisha Bhavad Ikarupad Yabedataha. Krishna has no cause, nor any equal, and he is one because his various forms, as Samsa Vibhinam, so that means as the expansions and as the living entities, are none different from himself. Text 31. So this verse describes who this Supreme Lord is that is beyond. He is the cause of all causes. What else is he? There are so many different things. Some people will say that Supreme Lord is he's impersonal, he's everything, and therefore he's impersonal. Another person might say, another philosopher or a yogi might say, he's in everyone's heart. Different philosophers may have different points of view. God is like this, one can't know anything about the Supreme Lord. He must be like this. There's so many, practically speaking, there are unlimited different conceptions about God, and basically no one fully agrees with anyone else. So why, if the Supreme Lord is the cause of all causes, why are there so many different conceptions of him? So texts 30 to 32 describe the different realizations of the Lord. And it's interesting what this verse is basically going to say is that we just heard in the previous verse that he's the cause of all causes. And yet we're hearing that there are so many different philosophers who have different opinions about who he is. So does that mean he is the cause of all their different opinions? And the answer is, if he's the cause of all causes, he's the cause of their opinions too. Even though they differ from each other. So amongst his qualities, because he has unlimited, amazing qualities, part of his qualities is that he allows different materialistic philosophers, who everyone wants to have their own idea, he allows these different philosophers to have different opinions about him or what the Supreme is, to have their own realizations. He places those realizations in their heart, reciprocating with their particular desires. This is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Yayatam mam prapadyante tamista taiva bhajam yaham. That he reciprocates with the philosophers according to their desires. He reciprocates with everyone according to their desires. Here's the verse. Let me offer my respectful obeisances. First thing, obeisances. Unto the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead, who possesses unlimited transcendental qualities, acting from within the cores of the hearts of all philosophers who propagate various views, he causes them to forget their own souls, while sometimes agreeing and sometimes disagreeing amongst themselves. So here, if we're talking about forgetting their souls, we're not even talking about jnanis or yogis, really. We're talking about speculating materialistic philosophers. And if you deal, go to any philosophical philosophy courses and study philosophers, whether it be Western or Eastern, everyone will have a different idea because we're individuals and we're looking at it from a different viewpoint. Viewpoint means literally looking at a view from a particular point. And a point is very small. So we're viewing things from our own point of view. our own individual karmic point of view, and we're trying to understand the Supreme, and therefore we have a different idea because we're only viewing the Absolute, which is unlimitedly vast, from our own small point. Here's Prabhupada's. So he causes them to forget their own souls while sometimes agreeing and sometimes disagreeing among themselves. Thus he creates within this material world a situation in which they are unable to come to a conclusion. I offer my obeisances unto him. So every philosopher will say, well, I think he's like this. And another philosopher will say, no, it can't be like this for this reason, but I think he's like this. And then a third philosopher will say, well, that can't be true for this reason, and I think he's like this. And no one can ever agree, because everyone is ultimately looking at it from a particular point of view, their own viewpoint. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Since time immemorial, that means forever, well, since the creation of the cosmic manifestation, which is a long time, the conditioned souls have formed various parties of philosophical speculations, people who agree with each other, grouped together, and they say, yeah, we're right, they're wrong. But this is not true of the devotees. Non-devotees have different ideas of creation, maintenance, and annihilation, and therefore they are called vadis or prativadis, proponents and counter-proponents. It is understood from the statement of Mahabharata that there are many munis or speculators. Tako pratishta shruteyo vabhina nasavrishyasya matam nabinam. All speculators must disagree with other speculators. What's a speculator? One whose ideas are based upon his own ideas. They are built upon his own basic concepts. Again, they're from a point of view, a viewpoint. All speculators must disagree with other speculators. Otherwise, why should there be so many opposing parties concerned with ascertaining the supreme cause? Philosophy means finding the ultimate cause. As Vedanta Sutra very reasonably says, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, human life is meant for understanding the ultimate cause. Devotees accept that the ultimate cause is Krishna, because this conclusion is supported by all Vedic literature and also by Krishna himself, who says, Aham Savasya Prabhavo, that I am the source of everything. Devotees have no problem understanding the ultimate cause of everything, but non-devotees must face many opposing elements because everyone who wants to be a prominent philosopher invents his own way. In India, there are many parties of philosophers, such as the Dvaitavadis, Advaitavadis, Vaisheshikas, Mimamsakas, Mayavadis, Swabhavavadis, and each of them opposes the other. Similarly, in the Western countries, there are also many philosophers with different views of creation, life, maintenance, and annihilation. Thus, it is undoubtedly a fact that there are countless philosophers throughout the world, each of them contradicting the other. Now, one may ask why there are so many philosophers if the ultimate goal of philosophy is one. Undoubtedly, the ultimate cause is one, the Supreme Brahman. As Arjuna told Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita 10:12, Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan Purusham Shashvatam Dibyam Aridevam Ajam Vibhu. There's only one ultimate cause, so why is it that everyone has a different idea of what that ultimate cause is? Arjuna's words to Krishna were confirming what Krishna said, Aham Savasya Prabhavo, that I'm the source of everything. He said, you are the Supreme Brahman, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, the ultimate, the supreme abode and purifier, the absolute truth, and the eternal divine person. You are the primal God. What does primal God mean? The Adi Purusham, the original God. There are so many gods of powerful person, but he is the Krishna Stu Bhagavan Sayam, the source who has no other source. And you are the unborn You are transcendental and original, and you are the unborn and all-pervading beauty. Non-devotee speculators, however, do not accept an ultimate cause, sarva karana karanam, because they are ignorant and bewildered concerning the soul and its activities, even though some of them have a vague idea of the soul. Many controversies arise, and the philosophical speculators can never reach a conclusion. I think this. Well, you may think that, but I think that. Well, that may be true, but I think that. Well, you may agree with these things, but I don't agree. This is right. No, this is right. No, this is right. So no conclusion, no agreement. All of these speculators are envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, because how did it say that the how can the Lord be known? If one is free from material contamination and in trance, then the Lord reveals himself due to the service attitude. But if one has an envious attitude, then the Lord doesn't reveal himself, or he reveals just a small part of himself. So there's envy. Not when the living entity doesn't understand how beyond and great the Lord is, so far beyond our tiny, insignificant capacity to understand. That's envy. Oh, I'll be able to find God. Just like if it's dark now, and we say, I will find the sun, and we go out with a flashlight to find the sun. How ridiculous. Why is it ridiculous? Well, it's never going to happen. Yeah, and when the sun, when it reveals itself, it gives off enough light. What is the use of your flashlight? So what is the use of our brains to find God? So envious of Krishna, the speculators, everyone in the material world is envious of Krishna. Tanaham dvishata kruran samsaresha radhamasya brahmajasaramasrapam asaresha eva yonashu asurim yonim apanam muda janmani janmani mam upratyayava kantaya tato yanti adamam gatim. So what happens to these envious people? 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita describes. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest amongst men, are cast by me into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life, attaining repeated birth amongst the species of demoniac life. Such persons can never approach me. Gradually, they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. Because of their envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, non-devotees are born in demoniac families, life after life. They are great offenders, and because of their offenses, the Supreme Lord keeps them always bewildered. Kurvanti chaisham muhuratma moham. The Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, purposely keeps them in darkness. The great authority, Parasara, the father of Vyasadeva, explains the Supreme Personality of Godhead thus. Jnana Shakti Baleshvarja Virya Tejam Si Asheshata Bhagavat Chabdavachani Bina Heya Gunalibi. The demoniac speculators cannot understand the transcendental qualities, form, pastime, strength, knowledge, and opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which are all free from material contamination. Vina Hayer Gunalibi. These speculators are envious of the existence of the Lord. Jagat ahur anisharam. Their conclusion is that the entire cosmic manifestation has no controller, but is just working naturally. Thus they are kept in constant darkness. Did we ever see anything work efficiently that had no controller? Anything, even one thing, just worked by chance automatically, naturally, that had no creator, no controller, and yet we assume the universe works in this way? Experience certainly teaches otherwise. So because behind that type of conclusion is envy, they are kept in constant darkness, birth after birth, and cannot understand the real cause of all causes because Krishna doesn't reveal it himself. This is the reason why there are so many schools of philosophical speculation. Krishna doesn't reveal himself as he is. Text 32. So that verse describes why there are so many different philosophers and different opinions about the Lord. But yet, although some people say that there is no God, and some people say there is a God, and some people says there is a God, but he has no form, and other people say there is a God, but he has form, and other people say there is God, but you can't know him. Another person says there is God, but there's no... But so many things. So there is. But what is the common thing in all these different opinions?
God.
They're all talking about God. So this verse says that's Krishna. So in one way or another, because they're talking, they have their mind focused on God, they're slowly or quickly approaching the absolute truth. Text 32. There are two parties, namely the theists and the atheists. The theists, who accepts the supersoul, the God in the heart, the Lord in the heart, finds the spiritual cause through mystic yoga. That's the yogi. The Sankhyites, however, who merely analyze the material elements, comes to a conclusion, the Sankhyite, comes to a conclusion of impersonalism and does not accept the supreme cause, whether Bhagavan, Paramatma, or even Brahman. Instead, he is preoccupied with the superfluous external activities of material nature. That's what the philosophers, the Sankhya philosophers, like the modern scientists, they're just examining forever material nature, trying to break it apart, find out what the smallest parts are, and break that down and break it and try to find the absolute cause in that way. Ultimately, however, both parties, the theists and the atheists, you can divide these two groups roughly into theists and atheists. Both parties demonstrate the absolute truth because although they offer opposing statements, their object is the same ultimate cause. They have their mind ultimately fixed on God. They are both approaching the same Brahman. They are talking about that same supreme Brahman to whom I offer my respectful obeisances. So his position, the reciter of the Hansaguya prayers, his position is clear. He's offering his obeisances to the Lord. Here's Prabhupada's, we'll read some of Prabhupada's purport here. Actually, there are two sides to this argument. Some say the Absolute has no form, nirakar, and others say the Absolute has a form, sakar. Therefore, the word form is the common factor, although some accept it, asti or astika, where others try to negate it, nasti or nastik, means atheist. Since the devotee considers the word form, akar, the common factor for both, he offers his respectful obeisances to the form, although others may go on arguing about whether the Absolute has form or not. So each shastra that one will read gives directions according to the path that one is on. So this can become bewildering, that the Jnana Yoga shastras give specific directions. You should do this, you should do this, you should do this. And you will perceive the Lord like this. And the Sankhya Yoga Shastra scriptures give directions according to that path. And the Astanga Yoga scriptures give their own directions to describe what the Lord looks like if you follow that path. And similarly with the Bhakti Yogis. But yet there is only one Lord. So what is the reconciliation between those who say, by following this path you will understand God, but that God that you will understand, you will see beyond all form, and you will understand that God is formless. So the Jnani Yogis will say that. And the devotees will say, no goddess form, clearly. You practice bhakti, you'll see the Lord with form, because it depends on the consciousness that you look at the absolute in, what you will realize. So if you look at it with neutrality, when consciousness examines itself, one sees the impersonal. But if one looks at consciousness with bhakti, and one is on in the path of bhakti, when one examines eternity, one will perceive the Lord as either Narayan in Vaikuntha, or as Krishna in Vrindavan, depending upon the consciousness that one views with. Everything depends on that consciousness. So what is the reconciliation? So if everything depends on consciousness, then one naturally wants to know, well, what's the truth? Does he have form or he doesn't have form? I don't want to hear it's both. But that's actually the reconciliation. That he both has form and he doesn't have form. So Prabhupada explains that he doesn't have form when looked at from the material point of view, because he has no material form. So when the Shastras say he is formless, he is arupa and anama, he has no form and he has no name, that means that he has no material form and no material name. So when one just simply has that knowledge, that no matter, none of the material conceptions has anything to do with the Absolute, then one will perceive the Lord as formless. But when one understands that when he is called Arupa and Anama, he has no name and no form, and that means that he has no material name or form, and after wiping clean all the material names and material forms, that doesn't negate the Lord from having a spiritual name and a spiritual form, and he has no material activities, but he has spiritual activities. But one can't understand these things, his spiritual form and spiritual activities and spiritual name, through material means, that one has to evoke the Lord's mercy through bhakti, so that the Lord reveals these name, forms, activities, qualities to us. So that is actually the reconciliation. Reconciliation means that it encompasses both sides of the formless form question. Both sides exist. There's no form, no material form, and one can perceive the Lord in his formless feature as jyoti, but one can also know the Lord, experience the Lord in his spiritual form, which is materially formless, materially nameless, but spiritually with form. So Prabhupada explains here, towards in the last paragraph of the purport, the directions given by the Bhakti Shastra point one in the perfect direction, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhakti Mam Mabhijananti, only by devotional service am to be known, because that evokes the Lord's mercy. And by his mercy only can he be known, because he has no material form. And by using material means, by our own power, all one will come up with is a formless conclusion. Only by devotional service am I to be known, Krishna says. The bhaktas know that the Supreme Lord has no material form, whereas the jnanis simply deny the material form. One should therefore take shelter of the bhakti marg, the path of devotion, then everything will be clear. Jnanis concentrate on the Virat Rup, the gigantic universal form of the Lord. This is a good system in the beginning for those who are extremely materialistic, but there is no need to think continuously of the Virat Rupa. When Arjuna was shown the Virat Rupa of Krishna, he saw it, but he did not want to see it perpetually. He therefore requested the Lord to return to his original form as two-armed Krishna. In conclusion, learned scholars find no contradictions in the devotee's concentration upon the spiritual form of the Lord. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya says that the less intelligent non-devotees think that their conclusion is the ultimate. And this one will find everywhere, that the non-devotee, the impersonalist, will think their conclusion, the formless conclusion, is the ultimate. But because devotees are completely learned, they can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal. So these two parties are progressing towards the absolute truth. Now, how to obtain the most complete realization? This is naturally the question. So here in the Hansakuya prayers, it is described. Yo anugrahartam bhajatam paramulam anamarupo bhagavan ananta namami rupani cha janma karma bir beje samayam paramam prasidato. Ya anugrahartam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, anugrahatam, to show his causeless mercy, bhajatam, to the devotee who is engaged in bhajan, always rendering devotional service, to show his mercy to those devotees. Padamulam, who worship, to those devotees, to show his mercy to the devotees who are worshipping his lotus feet. Anama rupo bhagavan ananta. That Lord who is devoid of material names, forms, and pastimes, and who has no material qualities, and the impersonalists say that it is qualityless, the absolute, but obviously this verse is talking about at least one quality, mercy. So how could the absolute truth be without qualities if he has the quality of mercy? And if he has one quality, he has to have another quality. The quality of having qualities. So he already has two. So if he has mercy, that means he can give mercy. That means he can give it, and it means also he doesn't have to give it. So he has a third quality. And a fourth. So he has the quality of not giving his mercy equally, or he has the quality of being able to not give his mercy, and then so if he has the quality of being able to give his mercy and not give his mercy, then he has choice. So one by one, the personality of Godhead can be understood just by understanding that he has one quality. So Bhagavan Ananta, this Bhagavan who possesses all opulences, this unlimited Lord, he is especially merciful to the devotees who worship his lotus feet. And how does he show that mercy? What is that special mercy? He exhibits his transcendental form, Namani Rupani Cha Janma Karma Bi. He exhibits his transcendental form. He shows the devotees himself. He reveals himself with his different pastimes, with his names in different pastimes. May that Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose form is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss, be merciful to me. So because of their bhajan, because of their devotional service, they evoke his mercy and he reveals himself. And thus, he establishes the ultimate conclusion. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. To show his causeless mercy, to the devotees as well as to the non-devotees, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears in this material world with names, forms, and pastimes, all of which are transcendental. Unintelligent men who cannot understand this think that these names, forms, and pastimes are material, and therefore they deny that he has a name or a form. Considered with scrutiny, the conclusion of non-devotees who say that God has no name, and that of devotees who know that His name is not material, are practically the same. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no material name, form, birth, appearance, or disappearance. But nevertheless, He takes His birth, Janma. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Ajopi san avayatma bhutanam ishvaropi san prakriti sam adhisthaya sambhavam yatma mayaya. Although the Lord is unborn, Aja, and His body never undergoes material changes, He nevertheless appears as an incarnation, maintaining Himself always in the transcendental stage, Shuddha Sattva. Thus He exhibits His transcendental forms, names, and activities. That is His special mercy toward His devotees. Others may continue merely arguing about whether the Absolute Truth has form or not, but when a devotee, by the grace of the Lord, sees the Lord personally, he becomes spiritually ecstatic. Unintelligent persons say that the Lord does nothing. Actually, He has nothing to do. But nevertheless, He has to do everything, because without His sanction, no one can do anything. The unintelligent, however, cannot see how He is working and how the entire material nature is working under His direction. His different potencies work perfectly. He has nothing to do personally, for since His potencies are all perfect, everything is immediately done by His will, His Ichha Shakti. Everything is done by His desire, His will. Persons to whom the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not revealed cannot see how He is working, and therefore they think, even if there is a God, He has nothing to do or has no particular name. And continuing a little further down in the purport. Generally, less intelligent men are under the impression that the Lord has no form. Therefore, He appears in His original form as Krishna, Sachidananda Vigraha, to carry out His mission of participating in the battle of Kurukshetra and pastimes to protect the devotees and vanquish the demons, Pritranaya Sadunam Vinashaya Chaduskritam. This is His mercy. For those who think He has no form and no work to do, Krishna comes to show that indeed He works. He works so gloriously that no one else can perform such uncommon acts. Although He appeared as a human being, He married 16,108 wives, which is impossible for a human being to do. The Lord performs such activities to show people how great He is, how affectionate He is, and how merciful He is. Although His original name is Krishna, Krishna is Tu Bhagavan Swayam, He acts in unlimited ways, and therefore, according to His work, He has many, many thousands of names. And then the final verse in the Pancaguya prayers. The Lord, this verse will explain that the Lord is reciprocating with everyone and revealing Himself according to the fashion or the mode or the mood and the qualification of those who are seeking Him. So therefore the conclusion is that one should worship that Supreme Lord and no one else to gain anything. Akama sava kama va moksha kama daradi tivrena bhakti yogeni adita purusha para. One should worship Him and not worship any demigods. One should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead and realize Him, that complete Supreme Lord, through His mercy, which will be obtained by worshiping Him purely. So here is the final verse. This is the conclusion. As the air carries various characteristics of the physical elements, like the aroma of a flower or colors resulting from a mixture of dust in the air, the Lord appears through lower systems of worship according to one's desires. Although He appears as the demigods and not in His original form. In other words, the Lord appears according to the process of worship. He appears differently. So in the lower processes of worship, He will appear as the demigods. But it is Him who is appearing in a partial way. what is the use of these other forms? May the original Supreme Personality of Godhead please fulfill my desires. Because he wants... See, this is Daksha speaking in the Hansaguya prayer. So what does he want? He has a desire to populate the universe. So instead of taking that desire to the demigods, which are manifesting different portions of the Lord's power, he's saying, what is the use of going to the demigods? Of course, the demigods can fulfill these desires, but what is the use of going to those demigods? Let me go to the Supreme Lord, who is the source of the power of the demigods. So he's asking that Lord to fulfill his desires. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport here. The conditioned soul cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by speculative knowledge or by imagination. One must therefore know the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That was the subject of the previous verse. He reveals himself, but he cannot be understood by speculation. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam by Lord Brahma, 10th canto, 14th chapter, 29th verse, Atapite devapadam bhujadvaya prasaraleshanugrihitte evahi janati tattvam bhagavan mahimno nachanya eko apichiram bhachinvan. My Lord, Brahma says, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. This is the verdict of the Shastra. An ordinary man may be a great philosopher and may speculate upon what the absolute truth is, what his form is, and where he's existing, but he cannot understand these truths. Sevan mukhi jivada swayam eva sparatyada. One can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead only through devotional service. This is also explained by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhaktyamam abhijananti yavanyaschasmitatvata. One can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is only by devotional service. Unintelligent persons want to imagine or concoct a form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But devotees want to worship the actual Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Daksha prays, one may think of you as person, you as personal, impersonal, or imaginary, but I wish to pray to your Lordship that you fulfill my desire to see you as you actually are. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, so he's actually praying to see the Lord here. This was his desire here. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that this verse is especially meant for the impersonalists who think that he himself is the Supreme because there is no difference between the living entity, the living being, and God. The Mayavadi philosopher thinks that there is only one Supreme Truth and that he is also the Supreme Truth. Actually, this is not knowledge, but foolishness. And this verse is especially meant for such fools whose knowledge has been stolen by illusion. Mayaya apita jnana. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that such persons, jnani manina, think themselves very advanced, but actually they are very unintelligent. They are unintelligent. In regard to this verse, the Madhvacharya says, Svadehastam harim prahur adham ajivam mevatu madhyamas chapanirnitam jivad binam janardhanam. There are three classes of men. The lowest, Adam; those in the middle, Madhyama; and the best, Uttam. The lowest, Adam, think that there is no difference between God and the living entity, except that the living entity is under designation. He has different thoughts about who he is. Whereas the Absolute Truth has no designations. In Maya, we're just thinking ourselves in a different way, and if we remove that, those thoughts about ourselves, those limitations on ourselves, then we'll understand our nature as Brahman, as that Soham. In their opinion, as soon as the designations of the material body are dissolved, the jiva, the living entity, will mix with the Supreme. They give the argument of gatakasha patakasha, in which the body is compared to a pot with the sky and the, within, a pot with the sky within and the sky outside. So if you have a pot, there's an empty pot, there's sky inside or air inside and air outside too. When the pot breaks, crash, the sky inside the pot becomes one with the sky outside. And so the impersonalists say that the living being becomes one with the Supreme. And of course the pot in their example is the body. So when the body is dissolved, the designations are removed, then we become the Supreme. This is their argument. But Srila Madhvacharya says that such an argument is put forward by the lowest class of men. Another class of men cannot ascertain what the actual form of the Supreme is, but they agree there is a Supreme who controls the activities of the ordinary living being. Such philosophers are accepted as mediocre, that's the super soul. So Brahman, then Paramatma, realization, the super soul, that he is controlling everything. The best, however, of those who understand the Supreme Lord, Satchidananda Vigraha, eternal form of bliss and knowledge. Purnanal Dadi Gunakam Sarvajiva Valakshanam. His form is completely spiritual, form of bliss, and completely distinct from that of the conditioned soul or any other living entity. Uttamas tu harim prahus taratti myena teshu cha. Such philosophers are the best because they know that the Supreme Personality of Godhead reveals Himself differently to worshippers in various modes of material nature. They know that there are 30 million demigods just to convince the conditioned soul that there is a Supreme Power and to induce him to agree to worship one of these demigods so that by the association of devotees he may be able to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So by accepting the demigods and worshipping them, at least one understands there is a power higher than me. And then when one sees there are so many demigods, and if one associates with devotees, one can understand that Krishna is the source. Aham adhya he devanam, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. I am superior, the origin of all the demigods. So by association of devotees, one can understand these things. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Mata parataram na anyat kincharasti dinanjaya. There is no truth superior to me. Aham adir hi devanam. I am the origin of all the demigods. Aham savasya prabhavo. I am superior to everything, even Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the other demigods. These are the conclusions of the Shastra, and one who accepts these conclusions should be considered a first-class philosopher. Such a philosopher knows that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Lord of the demigods, Deva, Devesh, Svaram, Sutram, Manandam, Pranavedina. So that ends Srila Prabhupada's long purport to this verse, and then ends the Hansaguya prayers where that beyond Lord, who everyone may have different opinions about, some are saying he's personal, some are saying he's impersonal, he can be understood by his mercy when one adopts a serving attitude and serves him with pure love, then the Lord reveals himself. And that is what Daksha is asking for him to reveal himself. So what happens next after Daksha offers these prayers? So we'll find out, if Krishna allows, we'll find out tomorrow. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Hansa Guru prayers ki jai.